invite your attention to turn to the book of Ecclesiastes again tonight, and we will study chapter 9. This is a chapter that sort of dovetails into the end of chapter 8 as it deals with the provident working of God, and it also has to do with understanding three concepts: life, death, and wisdom in view of life and death. We're getting close now to what Solomon ultimately in chapter 12 would draw as the great conclusion, the summary of the whole matter as you observe life under the sun. In chapter 8, he talked about what real wisdom involves, who is really a wise man, who's the real intelligent person. And he starts talking about very sobering things. That moves straight into chapter 9. Actually, 8 and 9 are like hand in glove, they go together. And so he will address in the middle of this section, in verses 7, 8, 9, and 10, the full life. If you really want to have a great life here of what God has blessed you with, here's how you live. So I call this section Living Life to the Full. I didn't put any of the verses on the slides, but how many of you are familiar with passages, and particularly in the Old Testament, that says when a person died, it says they died an old age and full of years. And then it says, and they were gathered to their people. One of those expressions, old age, means age as far as chronology is concerned. Many years. Okay? But full carried with the idea of in all the years that they lived a full life. See, it's possible to live many years and live a miserable life. And that's not what God intended. He intended for life to be enjoyed, not abused, lived in His service, but to enjoy. So that's what we're going to talk about tonight. There's a passage, however, put the ribbon of your Bible here in Ecclesiastes 9. Turn to Psalm 90. Many years before Solomon was ever born, and of course before Solomon then would have ever written what is found in Ecclesiastes, a man by the name of Moses wrote a song. And Psalm 90 is that song. This song often is mentioned at funerals because it has to do with 80 years, if by reason of strength, 80 years. So I put verse 10, and then we'll skip 11 and go straight to 12. The days of our years are 80 years, if by reason of strength they be 80 years. Yet is their strength labor and sorrow, for it is soon cut off and we fly away. Now, that passage has a lot to do with Ecclesiastes chapter 9. Because he'll talk about the labor and the sorrow and some of the complexities of what about a righteous person living? Surely he should live more lives than anybody. Or at least many more years than anybody, not lives. And a wicked person ought not live as many years. But do the wicked live a lot of years sometimes? And do the righteous have their lives cut off short sometimes? And it doesn't seem fair. So how do you respond to that? Whatever your days are, they are a lot of labor and sorrow. Then look at verse 12. So teach us. So teach us to what? To number our days that we may apply our hearts unto wisdom. Notice the concept. Life, death, and wisdom. And that's what Ecclesiastes 9 is about. Now remember, as I've mentioned before in some of the other lessons on Ecclesiastes, this book is primarily written to young people. Now I don't necessarily mean young people like junior high or even elementary school or anything like that. Because in this chapter, he's going to talk about rejoice with the wife of thy youth. So Ecclesiastes would be written primarily to those of age who would have been of meritable age. According to the context, it would make sense of a lot of the things that someone in that, what we call the prime of their life, they're in their early adulthood life or middle adulthood or whatever you want to call the concept of the time span of an adult's life. But the picture here is there's trappings, there's dangers, and looking at life and trying to say, what is the real full life for me? And of course, if I look at it just with my eyes, without a knowledge of the Bible, this looks like the way I ought to go, or this is the way I ought to go, and find out, well, that's a dead end, or this direction, and that's a dead end. So the question is, what is life? And Solomon said, if you look at it simply from the standpoint of your own wisdom and your own perception, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. But the Bible, obviously, here is teaching us what is not vanity. When you see life, you see death. Matter of fact, that's the first thing he's going to mention here. So what are the lessons in chapter 9? Look at the first six verses. For all this I considered in my heart, even to declare all this, that the righteous and the wise and their works are in the hand of God. In other words, God is sovereign and we are in his hand regardless of our station in life. No man knows either love or hatred by all this is there before them. All things come alike to all. All things come alike to all. It's time to be born, time to die, Ecclesiastes 3. Okay? There is one event to the righteous and to the wicked, to the good and to the clean, to the unclean, to him that sacrifices, to him that doesn't sacrifice. As is the good, so is the sinner. He that swears, as he that fears the oath. There is an evil among all things that are done under the sun, that there is one event unto all. Yea, also, the hearts of the sons of men is full of evil, and madness is in their heart while they live after they go to the dead. Watch verse 4. Quite an interesting, ironic statement here. For to him that is joined to all the living, there is hope. As long as you're alive, there is a sense in which you've got hope to keep on living. For a living dog is better than a dead lion. Interesting proverb there. A living dog is better than a dead lion, as it were. Note the next line. For the living know that they shall die. In other words, there's a consciousness of the land of the living. But the dead know not anything. Now, if you mean by that, the soul doesn't know anything when it departs from the body, that's not the teaching of the Bible. Man is very conscious in the Hadean realm, where he is, where he's not. He's also conscious of those that are around him. Luke 16 would teach that, right? So what he's talking about is not the soul here. He's talking about the body that dies. The body is not conscious of anything because what does the body do? It's corruptible. It goes back to the dust. Okay? Neither have they any more reward, for the memory of them is forgotten. That's not a pleasant thought to think about, that in a few generations down the road, if time keeps going on, if we all die, there'll be people to remember us for a few generations, and after that, all of a sudden, we'll be a passing memory. Then verse 6, also their love, their hatred, their envy is now perished, neither have they any more portion ever in anything that is done under the sun. So what he's talking about here says, let's talk about this common plight, let's talk about this thing that comes to all, and what is it? To the righteous, to the wise, to the wicked. He calls him the sinner here, the one that's not trying to live for right, but trying to live his own life away from God, still going to die. If you're righteous, you're going to die. If you're wicked, you're going to die. Well, what lesson am I to learn from that? Well, if I'm going to die anyway, one reasoning process would be, what difference does it make what I do, good or bad, if I'm going to die anyway? If I'm mortal and I'm going to die, just let me live my life and do what I want to do. Well, what do you want to do? How many times have people tried certain walks of life, sort of like experimenting with certain courses of life, and they find out there's bitter fruits in that life? And I don't want to go down that road. That's got some consequences that go with it. By the way, every choice has consequences, doesn't it? But because death is common to all, it's an appointed time, right? Hebrews 9:27, it's appointed unto man once to die, after this the judgment. How now am I going to view life in view of the fact that I'm going to die? How am I going to view that? By the way, you do remember chapter 7 of Ecclesiastes where it says, better is the day of one's death than the day of one's birth. Better is the day of one's death than the day of one's birth. If you take that statement and then come over to Ecclesiastes chapter 9, where he says, the dead know nothing at all. How is death better than the day of your birth? Because when you're born, you're alive, you become conscious, you start experiencing things, you start enjoying things in life. But when you die, it's over. By the way, just sort of my dad used to say, drive a peg down here and come back to this point in just a minute. The Jehovah's Witness doctrine that man doesn't have an eternal soul that's conscious when death occurs to the body and the soul goes to the Hadean realm. The Jehovah's Witness doctrine teaches that man basically, his soul, as they teach, is the air in your lungs, the spirit, the wind, the ruach, as they would use the expression. The ruach in the Old Testament also referred to that eternal side of man. The spirit shall return to God that gave it. The ruach will return to God that gave it. And there is air in your lungs by which your body continues to live, like the animated side. But the fact of the matter is, the body, when it dies, ceases pain, hatred, love, whatever. The soul knows its existence. The body does not. So that's what he's addressing here, looking from a physical perspective of life. Common plight to all. Now let's move on. I think, you get that point. Let's look at 7 to 10. Because now he says, if I know I'm going to die, whether I'm righteous or whether I'm wicked, but I want to live a full life while I'm alive, what should be the step 1, step 2, step 3, and in this case, step 4, perspective of how to live my life? Watch verse 7. Go thy way, eat thy bread with joy, drink thy wine with a merry heart, for God now accepts thy works. In other words, if you understand you're going to die, and you understand that God, you're in the hand of God, chapter 9, verse 1, and God did give you things richly to enjoy, 1 Timothy chapter 6, and verse 17, don't abuse riches, but use them as a good steward, use them wisely. He says, go your way and enjoy what God has given you. By the way, that's a good thing, isn't it? Okay, how many of us enjoy the clothes we have on our back? I'll tell you one thing. Yesterday morning, I enjoyed the clothes I had on my back. You come to a wedding, and the next thing you know, you got a tent out here, which, by the way, they're supposed to take that down in the morning sometime. And the wind's out of the north, 20, 30 miles an hour, gusting to 30 miles an hour. And I think the wind chill factor was, we would say at my house, K-Row. And that's zero, that's K-Row, real freezing, real cold, okay? And the next thing you know, you're enjoying the refreshments and so forth. Isn't it something to enjoy when you're talking about receptions at a wedding? By the way, I'd rather have a reception at a wedding than the food at a funeral, hadn't you? Funerals we don't enjoy, though we might eat the food. It's a lot more joyous to have a wedding and to have food at a reception than it is to have food at a funeral. So when you have occasions like this, enjoy it. Enjoy it. As a matter of fact, I often tell my family jokingly, they know I'm joking, the only reason I go to weddings is for the food anyway. I mean, I'm there to observe the ceremony and so forth, but really, I'm there to enjoy it. Okay? By the way, I think everybody enjoyed yesterday too, right? Okay? But the fact of the matter is, what you have, enjoy it. Look at verse 8. Let thy garments always be white, and let thy head lack no ointment. What do you mean your garment's always white? Well, that has to do with their part of the world and the kind of clothes that they wore. A person who was in severe mourning, like at a funeral, he didn't really take care of his appearance. Remember Job, when he was really suffering, he's had 10 children's death, he's had a funeral for 10 children, then now he's got sores from the crown of his head to the sole of his feet, and he's out at the ash heap doing what? Scraping himself with a piece of fire. What does his clothes look like? What would his appearance look like? We would say, awful. As a matter of fact, the Bible says in Job chapter 2 that when his friends saw him afar off, they did not even recognize him. And then when they got close to him and recognized that it was Job, it says, for 7 days, they didn't say a word to him. They were astonished at his grief. 7 days, didn't say a word to him. Went to comfort him, learned of his sorrows, went to comfort him, and for 7 days didn't talk to him at all. Didn't know what to say. Which, by the way, is a pretty good way to express your grief and sympathy to a man who is grieving like that. Let your garments be white. In other words, keep your appearance. When I was taking psychology classes at Fried Hardeman, there are certain signs of people, outward communication, that you can tell something's going on in here or something's going on in their physical life. It's called the silent cry for help. Have you ever heard that expression? The silent cry for help. For example, here's a person who's neat as a pin. I mean, their necktie's not crooked. Their shirt is starched cotton white. I mean, there's not a hair out of place. In my case, it would be hair, not hairs. Not a hair out of place. Okay, creasing the pants and so forth. And all of a sudden, you see them on the street that would wear typically the same clothes. There's just stains all over the shirt. The collar's, you know, ripped and torn. And the person acts like they don't care. And said, that's not right. Something's wrong here. Depression carries an outward sign with it. When a person's really depressed, the first thing that generally lets go is your appearance. Your appearance. I don't care. Used to, they had cartoon sketches of women who were having a bad day. Here's the woman's having a bad day. She's dressed up. She's clean. She's got on her finest dress. And she's got on the greatest looking pair of shoes she's got waiting for her husband. Her hair and her makeup and everything like that. And then here's a woman over here in sweatpants. And her hair looks like a stump full of granddaddy long legs. Now, if he walks in and says, "How, honey, how was your day?" He asked the wrong question, didn't he, to the woman who's just in the sweatpants. And it's like, who wants to know? In other words, you see it coming, right? You know, let your hair have its ointment. In other words, that arid climate in the Middle East, particularly if you lived up there in the desert region around Palestine, it'll dry your skin out. The Dead Sea mud, have you ever heard of that? That's actually a cosmetic they sell. It's pretty expensive. And actually, they put it on there and actually it's a skin treatment. I mean, I've seen pictures of it. I've never experienced it. But the fact of the matter is, that is a very, very dry climate in the desert region. Dead Sea, Jordan River is a very dry climate. By the way, it's a tropical climate, too. It's got palm trees in it. Okay. So what do? When you take a bath and you put on clean clothes, you would also put on a certain kind of oil that would be on your skin to make it soft and supple, and also you put it in your hair because your scalp would dry out and your hair would dry out. It becomes brittle. So this is the picture here. Let your garments always be white or clean. Let your head lack no ointment or oil. Okay. Verse 9. Live joyfully with the wife whom thou lovest all the days of the life of thy vanity, which he has given unto thee and the son, all the days of thy vanity, for that is thy portion in life, and in thy labor which thou hast taken under the sun. In other words, here's food and drink to enjoy. Here's the clothing and the things that have to do with your appearance. And you're married to this woman all the days of your life. You've committed to be married to her. Enjoy your life. Enjoy your life. By the way, how many of us would call that the simple life? The simple life. I remember Pam's father. As a matter of fact, Pam's father and mother both lived a very simple life. Going out to eat was a Big Mac attack. That was his expression. I'm having a Big Mac attack. By the way, that was not going to some steakhouse. That was going down to McDonald's and getting a Big Mac. To him, that was a treat. And I'm like, I had Big Mac as a teenager, you know, just hanging out with the guys. Of course, Bremen, we went to Huddle House. You know, that's about all Bremen, Georgia had was the Huddle House. Okay? In other words, you have something to eat, you have something to wear, you got your family, life's good. How about it? Life's good, isn't it? You got the simple things. And then this verse, verse 10. Whatsoever thy hand finds to do, do it with thy might. For there is no work, nor device, nor knowledge, nor wisdom in the grave, whither thou goest. So has he gotten away from the subject of death? Oh no. He's right back to it, isn't he? We all headed to the grave. Preacher, how's that good news? Well, it's tough to be reminded we're all headed to the cemetery plot. So what am I going to do between now and the cemetery plot? I'm going to enjoy what God has blessed me with. I'm going to enjoy my family and any other great worthy contribution I can give to society, to my life, to my family. I'm going to do it with all my might. By the way, did you know happy people are people dedicated in their work? Show me a person who's a hard worker at their job and wants to do the best that they possibly can, and they do the best they can, and while it may not be what most people think is achievement, it is achievement to them. They're really happy people. Do it with all your might. Let's look at the flip side of that. Have you ever known of anybody that's got a job and they don't really want to do that? They don't want to put their heart in it. They don't want to put, I'd say, 100% in that. Have you ever watched their attitude? You ever watch their attitude? Okay, now that Brex is in the family, I'm going to abuse him, all right? Okay. He's fair game now, right, since he's in the family? And by the way, since he's not here, y'all tell him I said this, all right? Okay. Brex has had different jobs in his life, and I sort of quizzed him about that. I had a good 45-minute conversation, he and I alone, yesterday morning for this week. Got a lot of good information in 45 minutes out of that guy. And 72 hours ago, he got a telephone call from a company in Decatur that is the job he's been dreaming about as far back as he can remember. And for weeks and weeks and weeks, they weren't calling him. He got two interviews, and they said, "We'll call you." And weeks passed, and he didn't get this call. So he's like, "I got a job, but the job I've got is not the one I want to do all the rest of my life. By the way, I'm about to get married. I guess I need a job, right?" By the way, what do you think his father-in-law thinks about you need a job? Yes, son. Don't drop what you got till you get what you're looking for. If they never call, you keep what you got. Isn't that right, moms and dads? Okay. And you got a wife now. Live with a wife all your days of your vanity. Enjoy that. Enjoy what you've got. Put your hand to it. And all of a sudden, he got the call 72 hours ago, and Decatur says, "Job's yours." So now he's about to give his 2-week notice to where he is. But he told him he would do that. And on the 17th day of November, he starts his new job. By the way, a lot of prayers went up for that job at my house and his house. Okay? God answers prayer. I don't know how in the world we was going to survive the agony of knowing they hadn't called yet. But they did. He goes, "Whew," just like that, just like, "I can't tell you the relief of knowing that. I can't tell you the load off my mind." I said, "Yeah, enjoy your wedding now. Go on your honeymoon. You don't even have to think about that. You got this thing coming behind you." And then here's what I told him. I said, "You keep on doing the right thing. God will take care of you." That's what I told him yesterday morning. He said, "That's what my daddy keeps telling me." You reckon his daddy's a pretty smart fella? You keep doing the right thing. We didn't know when it was going to happen or how it was going to happen. God will take care of you. We don't know how the providence of God's going to work out in the future. I think I can look back in my life over the history of my life and say, I know the goodness of God and the providence of God is taking care of me. I'm going to lean on that. That's called faith, isn't it? Enjoy what you have. Don't be pessimistic and just look at the grave that's out here in front of you. Enjoy what you have, knowing, well, life is going to end. Yes. As I always say, what's the old expression? All things good must come to an end, right? But to the child of God, the end is not the end, as we'll see in chapter 12. Let's go back. As you now come to 11, and actually there's two paragraphs, 11 to 18, there's a great challenge here, challenging problem. And here's what it is, and I'll sort of give you the point as we go to it. He still is talking about death and its problem, but he's talking about the power of one person for good or for evil. The power of one person. Watch. I returned. In other words, I observed this and understood I'm going to the grave whether I do wickedness or do righteousness. I believe what God gave me is according to my benefit and enjoyment, not to abuse it, but to use it. And I will set my fist and my hand and my mind to do all that was in my power to whatever I set my feet to do. And as we say, if you're gonna, my daddy's expression is, if you're gonna be a bear, be a grizzly. You understand that expression? In other words, if you've got a project to do, do it to the fullest extent of your ability. Of Ecclesiastes 7:10, right? I returned, I saw under the sun, the race is not to the swift, the battle to the strong, neither yet bread to the wise, nor riches to men of understanding, nor yet favor to men of skill, but time and chance happen to them all. What's time? Situations, chance, occasions that happen by accident, that you never planned, and they happened anyway. But I'm in the hand of God. All's right with the world, whether I live or die. That's the perspective he's dealing with. The race is not always to the swift. The victory is not always to the strong. By the way, do underdogs sometimes win games? Do those that are outnumbered sometimes win the victory? Things happen that you can't explain, but they happen. So live your life understanding that. Look at verse 12. For man also knows not his time, as the fish are taken in an evil net, or in a net of calamity, as the birds that are caught in a snare, the sons of men snared in an evil time or difficult time, when it falls suddenly upon them. By the way, that's what Job said in the book of Job. That which I dreaded or that which I feared has come upon me. We always fear or anticipate something bad happening. By the way, how many of you got a relative that even when things are going well, they can't be happy? Do you understand what I mean by that? How are you doing today? Well, I'm doing well right now, but I'm sure it's going to get worse. And when things went worse, I told you they're going to get bad. Didn't I tell you that? I can't be happy because I know if I ever get happy, that'll get taken away from me, and I'll be worse happy than I am now. So I just choose to be miserable. And we laugh about that, but let me tell you something. Phyllis and I got relatives like that. That is a toxic attitude, is it not? You just want them as your neighbors. You want them as your in-laws, right? You want that to marry into your family. No. Verse 13. This wisdom have I seen under the sun, and it seems great unto me. In other words, of all the things that you could observe about all things that happen that don't seem to make sense, I observed one particular illustration of this, and here it is. Watch. There was a little city, and few men therein. Matter of fact, we'd call this a real small town. Like to Birmingham, Alabama, it'd be Coffee Pot, Alabama. By the way, not even a township, just a crossroads with a store on a hill. little city, a few men in it. There was a great king against it. He besieged it. He built great bulwarks or strongholds against it. In other words, he's attacking this small city. Just by pure military observation, what do you think is going to happen to that little town with its few people? Great king, all his military structure, he's coming to sack this city. Does it look good for the home team? Next verse. There was found in it a poor, wise man. One man. He's not wealthy, probably not got a lot of influentiality in the town, but he did have some wisdom. There was in it a poor, wise man, and he, by his wisdom, delivered the city. Wow. The odds are stacked against this town being free, not being sacked, the odds are against you. And this man says, I'm going to try. And he goes out there facing the king and his army, and he uses the wisdom that he has. And the king says, we will not attack your town. What do you think that town ought to do for him? What do you think that town ought to do for that man that actually, by his intelligent wisdom, saved that city? See, I didn't read the rest of that verse, did I? Watch the line. Yet no man remembered that same poor man. The last Monday in May in this country, if I'm not mistaken, I know it's on a Monday, it's called Memorial Day. And in the month of November, the very, very near future, is Veterans Day. I know there are individuals who have given the ultimate, gave their life for you and I to enjoy what we have in our freedoms. But do you know there was also some wisdom? Some people say it's oxymoron, military intelligence, right? Wisdom. Somewhere in the planning side of going to battle and winning victories. By the way, some battles are determined by the weather. Read that in history. Weather has a lot to do with successes and failures of military, conquest. But nobody remembered this man. This man saved this town by his wisdom. He wasn't wealthy, evidently wasn't greatly influential. And once the king and that army left, they didn't honor this man. Forgot all about him. Look at the next line, verse 16. Then I said, wisdom is better than strength. Strength there means military strength. Nevertheless, the poor man's wisdom is despised, and his words are not heard. The words of wise men are heard in quiet more than the cry of him that rules among fools. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner will destroy much good. Wisdom is better than all the nuclear bombs you can put on this planet. I was thinking back years ago, I was talking about eradicating all nuclear warheads in the world. You remember the Cold War between the Soviet Union and the United States? By the way, we're not the only ones that got the bomb. Other foreign countries have got the bomb that developing the technology for it. So if we get rid of all the weapons, there won't be any nuclear threat. I don't believe we're that. Here's why I don't believe it. Because as long as there's somebody out there who's got the intelligence to make one, there's a threat. Does that make sense to you? You can get rid of all the existing weapons. As long as somebody still knows how to make one, the threat is still there. Intelligence is the power. Intelligence is the power. That's why school teachers teach, isn't it? Because education is power. Wisdom is power. The ability to make great decisions, the ability to make application to information that is applicable to your life. Here's a poor man in this town, save this town. The town is set free from this siege. All the weapons of war could not spare that town if they were to start to try to attack. But that man and his wisdom and intelligence saved the town better than all the weapons the town could muster. And Solomon looked at that event. He said, that is life. He said, but you take one sinner. Sinner there means one unintelligent man who's going to live by his own wits and not follow true wisdom. He would have destroyed that whole town. 1 Samuel 17, Saul had his army out there on the hills in the valley of Elah in the middle of it. And the great champion of the Philistines walked down in that valley every day, challenging the armies of God. Young shepherd boy from Bethlehem goes to check on his brothers. He happens to show up down there when that great champion of the Philistines walked out in that valley and defied the armies of the living God. And that little shepherd boy said, who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? His brothers criticized him for doing that. Saul, the king's up there on the hill. He's supposed to be the commander-in-chief to go down there and attack that army. He should have been the one to go down there and face Goliath. And David said, I'll go. What do you know about military? You're a shepherd boy. The Lord delivered me out of the paw of the lion and the bear. He'll deliver me for this uncircumcised Philistine. By the way, that's courage, isn't it? That got back to Saul. Bring that boy here. David shows up, says he was ruddy in a youth. Ruddy means he was sunburned, evidently red. Didn't look like a seasoned veteran that had been out there tanned and ready to fight anybody. But we call him a school kid. Put his armor on him. Saul took his armor, put it on David. David said, I've not proved that. This doesn't work. Goes out to a brook, picks up five smooth stones. He's got a sling. He's got five stones. How many of the five stones did he need? He didn't need one. Power wasn't in David, and the power wasn't in the stone. The power was in the God that David represented. And it was God that made sure the stone hit the mark. And it did. When the giant came tumbling down, as the old song goes, David took the sword of the giant. They that live by the sword die by the sword. David cut his head off. Here's a wise kid delivered the nation from the Philistine army. What Saul won't do to him after that? Remember him, honor him, prestige. When they start singing, Saul has slain his thousand and David his 10,000, Saul eyed him from that day forward. I want him dead. I want him dead. One sinner can destroy much good. Power of one bad egg. On the other side, the power of one wise child. While I'm talking to an audience of I don't know how many individual people, a crowd we would say, we're all single individuals. Do you believe, as a member of the Bethel Church of Christ, you have a power to bring this church down. Do you believe that? Do you believe you could do something so vile, whether it be religiously or morally wrong, that when it got public knowledge in this community, it could truly hurt the influence of this church, you individually? I believe that can happen with anybody in this room. But that's not how I want to end this lesson. You believe you individually can make such an impact for good, you individually now, by your knowledge of the Bible and the ability to apply it in difficult times and situations, that when a person sees you and sees how you're using your wisdom of the Bible, they would say, "Now that is a congregation I won't be a part of." I've been looking for that kind of wisdom all along. I've been looking for people that lean that heavily on what God's Word says. The power of one. The power of one for evil. The power of one for good. By the way, the one Solomon picked out of the whole town was what most people wouldn't even have picked out. Little poor man. Most people don't give the time of day of a person that don't have a lot of money, do they? Oh, he a dime a dozen. By the way, was he a dime or a dozen? He saved the town. It wasn't because of his money. It was because of what he had up here. And what he did with it. He would be a man, live that little simple life, and whatsoever you find your hand to do, you do it with all your might. And he did. We're all headed to the grave. What in the world are we going to do? We're going to do our best. And we're going to live life to the full. Life is not to be lived in a negative mentality. I don't care how bad it gets or how bad the outlook is. I am to live soberly. Soberly carries with the idea of to think clearly and to think right with the right information. We all know we're going to die. We're not going to let that get us down. Right? Not going to let that get us down. We're going to enjoy what God allows us to have. We're going to live with our families the best we possibly can. We're going to put our hand to whatever our hands might can do and do it with all our might. Hold our chin up. And when the enemy comes, use the wisdom God has given us, even if it's just me by myself. And everybody else forsakes it. Me by myself. I'll go down into the valley of Eli and I'll go face my giant. And if God be with me, who can be against me? Read that in a book somewhere. And that's Ecclesiastes 9. If you'll start reading Ecclesiastes 10, what you're going to find is the magnification of the damage of what one sinner can do. And you won't go down that road. A dead fly in the ointment. If you're here tonight, you understand the principles of life, particularly as we've stayed tonight. God gave you greatness in giving you life. God gave you greatness in the ability to have a sound mind, to be able to study like what we've studied. But maybe you've wasted your life like the prodigal, been given this great inheritance of God, and what have I done with it? I didn't do it for God, and I didn't do it for the good of man. I did it for my own pleasures and my own desires. How's it working out for you? Not good. Not good at all. Didn't pan out like I thought. Well, you can come home. You can come home and you can have a clean start. And you can have a great inheritance, no doubt, in heaven. And you can have good life even now. It's called rehabilitation. Brethren, if any of you be overtaken in the fault, you at your spiritual restore such a one in the spirit of meekness, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. Galatians 6, 1-3, 1-2. If you're here tonight and need to be baptized in Christ, I'm here to assist you. Make that noble confession, obviously crucifying that old man in repentance. If you're here tonight and need to come home for the prayers of the church, be restored. Won't you come as we stand and sing as Tim leads us.